It's time for the WJBM Outdoor Show, presented by Midwest Tractor Sales. We'll hear from your host, Aaron Quillen, after this.
See more and do more in a new 300 Series compact track loader from New Holland. Its industry-leading 360-degree visibility is truly something to see at Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville. With its reverse camera and 8-inch multifunction LCD display, Super Boom lift technology, rock-solid stability, and redesigned controls, you'll work with greater speed, safety, and precision. Maximum productivity starts with a clear view. Stop by Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville today and see how a new 300 Series compact track loader helps you do more.
Welcome to the WJBM Outdoors Show, brought to you by Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville. Today, we're coming to you from the WJBM studios in Jerseyville, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I'm Aaron Quillen. I operate Monarch Rivers, where the mission is simple: kill big deer. Today, we have a guest that I'm very excited to introduce, Mr. Scotty Bryant from I-4. Thank you, Scotty.
Oh, glad to be here.
Yeah, very happy to have you here. I don't know a ton about you or I-4. I feel like I should know more, but in our interactions, I've been so intrigued. You've just got so much information and so much to offer. I'm really excited to have you here today.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you. So on that note, tell us a little bit about yourself, your role at I-4, and kind of what I-4 does.
Well, I grew up here in Jersey County my whole life and have lived in the general area, and a long big waterfowl hunter and deer hunter when I was young, and of course got involved with a group called Migratory Waterfowl Hunters back, I don't know, about 28 years ago. Started there as a board member and then went on to be the president of that organization for 9 years, and then became the I-4 president because of that, and then even had to go back and do both for 2 years. So actually was the president of Migratory Waterfowl for 11 years. And then, of course, I've been the president of I-4 now for 14 years. And the group is, when I got with I-4, they had 75,000 affiliate members statewide and about 45 organizations statewide and 30 of those that sat on their board. Well, as of today, we have 141,000 affiliate members and 61 organizations that we represent statewide, and still same 30 board members that sit that represent everybody that does anything in outdoor recreation in the state of Illinois. You know, from Whitetails Unlimited, Turkey Federation, you know, gun clubs, trail riding clubs, horse groups, just basically anyone that, you know, the Illinois trappers, commercial fishermen, we represent them all in the state legislature, and we have a full-time lobbyist that protects our interests and looks out for the people of the state of Illinois.
Okay, that's big time. So from a lobbying perspective at the state level, that gives you personal contact with basically anyone that is responsible for making decisions in regard to our outdoor enjoyment of property, both private and public.
Yes. Okay. Over the years, it's been, you know, I sat on the advisory board for the Department of Natural Resources for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I was appointed to that position by Governor Pat Quinn. I was reappointed to that position under Governor Rauner. Wow. And then I was removed from that position whenever this governor abolished the advisory board of the DNR and made some accusations about things that I had said. And the legislature actually abolished this advisory board and did away with it, said it was not working. And that was 3.5 years ago. They were supposed to put a new advisory board in place, all handpicked by this governor and his people. And that has still not happened. I understand it is starting to happen now, almost 4 years later. But there's been no oversight of that agency for 4 years now the public. So one of the things we were talking about back then was money, that grant money that was not being used properly. One of the things that I'm a stickler for, when the people ask me to go do things, I ask a lot of questions. I try to educate myself on the facts, mm-hmm. so that we don't make mistakes and that the people are getting what they pay for, basically, with their tax money, and it's being used and utilized in the proper ways. So that's one thing that has went on. it's kind of a slap in my face a little bit, all of the work that I've done, because we don't get paid for any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've talked before. I do a lot of stuff, you know, all of my life because of my background and the way I had to grow up. And, you know, I'm a volunteer football coach as well for the Jerseyville Junior Panthers.
Yeah.
I'm also the vice president of the Carrollton School Board.
Yeah.
And I do this too as well. So, and I have 11 children, me and my wife. Wow. I have 9 grandchildren. So my life stays very busy, and I, you know, I give back every chance that I get, you know, because I've had a good life and I want to make sure kids have what I had. So that's when people ask me those questions, that's what I tell them. You know, there's friends of mine that say, well, I don't even know why you do that stuff. You're not making a difference. Well, somebody's going to have to do it, or we're not going to have anything.
Right.
You know, so when you ask the hard questions of our legislators and our governors, you know, and I'll stay off the national level because I work strictly here in Illinois, but it doesn't seem like a lot of people here anymore want to hear what the public has to say, the people that actually pay the bills, you know, that keep our state parks running, because it's their money.
Mm-hmm.
It's not anybody else's except for the people that pay for it here.
Right.
And whenever you don't listen to those people, they're going to be upset. And that's when they come to us. And I've been told that we shouldn't have any right to question. We shouldn't have any right to ask any questions, all the way down to you don't have any authority. Well, last time I checked, if you read our Constitution, every one of us has the right to question our leaders. And it's our responsibility to do that if we think they're doing wrong. So that's basically a rundown of what I do most of the time. And you know, where I came from, you know, at 13, 14 years old, I was basically on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I've made it all the way up here without even finishing high school. You know, and it's because I do what the people ask of me.
Yeah.
And it's not personal. It's not anything other than the fact that I'm asking for honest answers when I ask questions. And in today's world, those are hard to find.
Yeah. Yeah. Politics doesn't make it any easier.
Oh, it's not a clean place to be in.
No.
It's just really not. And I'm not picking on one side or the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a fact of life anymore.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
But I've made great personal contacts, and I spent a lot of time in my early years in Springfield in that IDNR office, sometimes 2 and 3 days a week,
mm-hmm.
you know, sitting and talking with people, trying to help the DNR. You know, I've won the Volunteer of the Year Award for the DNR. I've got countless things on my wall, you know, awards and stuff from the Corps of Engineers and people that I've got mm-hmm. over the years. And, you know, that's not why I do this. You know, that's all great and fine and well, you know, that is. It's not about me. It's about what the people want done and how we protect the heritage that we grew up living in, people uh-huh. like me and you. So yeah. That's why I do what I do.
Awesome, man. Awesome. That's just... it's important, and, you know, I guess on a personal level, how did you know that this was going to be your calling? How did you know that this was the role that you were going to step into?
I didn't. I didn't. You know, I grew up out in the country. I went to city schools. I didn't always fit in there very good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I played some football and stuff, sports, a lot of that. Struggled along the way, and... you know, got in some trouble along the way, you know, in my life, you know, made bad decisions like a lot of young people do today. Mm-hmm. And truly, I believe that the outdoors probably saved me.
Okay.
So it's, you know, whenever I got the chance, actually, there was a gentleman named John Janaris. I went to a meeting, and he was on me, you know. It was a migratory meeting about the hunting areas, and I was in there telling him what I thought, you know. I'm pretty opinionated. And he said, well, how come you don't sit on this board? You know, you got good ideas. How come you ain't involved with this organization, and why ain't you doing something?
Right.
Well, that was the start of it, because okay. it was basically a challenge, and, you know, if you challenge me, I'm going to step up to the challenge. And, of course, here, almost 30 years later, here I am sitting here with you. So, you know, I mean, and I've sat with people I never would have ever thought, you know, director's offices, governor's offices, representatives, senators, great working relationship with the Corps of Engineers over the last 20-some years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just left Pierre Marquette Park before I came up here with Scott Isringhausen, You know, I also volunteer and run the bluegill pond at the fishing fair, you know, 1,400 kids every year.
Okay.
Last year I didn't do that because of all of the fighting and arguing. I can't get my people to help the IDNR now because they're tired of not being listened to and being treated poorly. Mm-hmm. So I'm going back this year. I penalize the kids, I feel, because somebody needs to do that and help out down there. And I apologize to Scott and his staff for last year. And I'm going back, and I'm taking my people and go back and take care of those kids. So,
right on. Right on. And it's tough. Like, I know guys at the DNR.
Oh, there's great people.
They're good
out
dudes.
There.
They're good dudes. And it's tough. Like, you get into the politics and the bureaucracy. I mean, I'm glad that you're out there with a voice. Otherwise, who would be doing it?
Well, I mean, the individual organizations would be doing it, I'm sure, to a certain extent. But that's the umbrella that I4 provides. It puts all of the outdoor recreation groups under one umbrella to work together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, when I went there, that was the one thing that I wanted to make sure, that we were all going to work together. And we actually started off arguing and fighting over some hunting property up around Brown County that they were wanting to take away from the hunting community and turn into a four-wheeler park that was bought with sportsman's dollars. And, of course, there was a big, huge fight with the group from up in that area and my friends at the Abate Motorcycle Group over that. You know, a guy that sits on my board now for Abate that actually sits on the I-4 board, his name's Hunter John Harris.
Mm-hmm.
And Glenn Sanders, my vice president, who's Mississippi Valley Hunters and Fishermen's Association up in Quincy.
Yeah.
And they just absolutely was ready to go to blows at each other over all of this. And now those two sit on my board side by side and work together and have worked together to get this four-wheeler park opened up, you know, for years down there in southern Illinois at Sahara Woods.
Okay.
You know, so that's just some of the stuff that you sit and watch, you know, go on. And you worked on all this time with different governors and directors. And then we don't get invited to the ribbon cutting. Or, you know, 5:45 the night before, I get an invitation from the director who hasn't talked to me in a year.
Right.
Or hasn't had a sit-down meeting with me and my constituents since she's been the director, which we've asked for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a slap in the face to us.
Yeah.
And I don't have anything against the director. You know, I think she's doing, you know, trying to do her job, but she still has somebody that she answers to that makes the calls for what she has to do.
Yeah.
So when I hold those people accountable,
yeah,
and that goes straight to the governor of the state of Illinois. You know, I actually challenged him at a dinner to a celebrity boxing match between me and him anywhere he wants. And he can pick whatever charity he wants to give the stuff to.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just, that's the type of stuff. You know, there is no communication with the public in our natural resources department hardly anymore unless you're an environmentalist.
Right.
And I'm not against the environment, but we have to protect it all and not just one thing.
Yeah, well, one of my perspectives is real simple. If you're going to charge tremendous fees for the right to hunt, the right to fish, those fees need to be spent or allocated to things that benefit us, the ones paying for the tags. Is that happening? I don't know that anybody amongst the general public really has any indication of whether it's happening.
Well, the sportsmen's of Illinois and across the country are the ones that always toe the line when it comes to funding.
Mm-hmm.
If you need a fee increase, we're the ones that get it.
Mm-hmm.
And we usually don't balk at that very often as long as it's being used properly.
Right.
You know, but that's not always the case. And, you know, right now, Illinois has failed a federal audit. And you know, the questions have been asked that there's $118 million of funding that we could have got from the federal government out of sportsman's dollars. And because we didn't match 10% of that, which would have been $1.8 million, and I don't hold me straight to the number, but it's we didn't do $1.8 million, and we lost $118 million because of it. It makes no sense, and now we're at a high risk. And then when you hear other radio shows or people are talking, you know, well, there is no missing money. Well, I think the people are confused because they don't sit where I sit at when we're saying the money's gone. It's gone because we didn't get it. Another $8.7 million of funding of Pittman Robertson money for W76D sites across the state of Illinois is also been lost this last year because we didn't do our paperwork and turn in the reimbursements. So when we're looking at this type of mismanagement, if I mismanaged in my business or being a union laborer boss out on roads and highways and I made these types of mistakes, I know what would have happened to me. And I don't want to see anybody get in trouble, but we have to fix these problems. And in order to fix problems like that, I believe you got to be honest and realize there is one first. And I think that that's where the struggle is. We can hide it. We can make excuses for it. But we don't fix the problem. Now, they did fire one guy, one person.
Right.
Walked him out, from what I understand. And I'm not a fan of that gentleman. But I really think that he was a scapegoat because there's a lot more people involved with that type of funding and stuff than just one poor guy.
Right.
You know, and even though I don't really care for the gentleman, I won't sit here and say that he was treated properly because I don't think he was.
Right.
You know, and I'm an honest guy. That's my opinion. You know, I don't speak for I4 all the time when I'm talking. That's just my personal opinion. I know the gentleman personally. I've dealt with him for about 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can't get workers out on the ground, but we can hire deputy directors and we can hire these high-end jobs. But we can't get funding for Pierre Marquette State Park. You know, we have a CDB project. Yeah. We have a CDB project down there that we've worked on for I don't know how many years now.
What's CBD?
Capital Development Board.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, it's $7 million restoration project for one of those camps up on the top.
Okay.
And they started that last year. So the funding, it's ready to go. It's going. They've cut trees down. They've did stuff. Well, all the funding just got pulled. That's put to an end now. And then somebody's going to say, well, where'd the money go? Well, we've got cuts. You know, we're at a $3 billion deficit in the state of Illinois in our budget. So guess who gets cut? The DNR is the first cut almost every time, no matter who the governor is.
Yeah. Oh, let's take a minute. We're going to take a break and hear a word from our sponsors, and we're going to be right back to talk some more about that. Welcome back to the WJBM Outdoor Show, brought to you by Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville. Today, we're coming to you from the WJBM studios in Jerseyville, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I'm Aaron Quillen. I operate Monarch Rivers, where the mission is simple, kill big deer. And with us, we have Scotty Bryant from I-4. Scotty, say again, I-4 stands for?
Illinois Federation for Outdoor Resources.
There we go. And then before the break, we were talking about a lot of things, in particular, major funding cuts, whether it be, you know, from a park perspective or even a department perspective. That is interesting that the position of the DNR getting cut first. When you said that, it made me think, and I feel comfortable because I think you're going to know what I'm going to talk about here. There was a law that went through that there was a language that basically said, don't you think that toll roads collect tolls and that toll money should be used for the highway?
Yes.
And people voted for that? Like, oh, that's common sense.
That's the lockbox amendment, which opened up a lot of funding that changed a lot of different. You know, they had to read more down into the wording on it because it got worse than that, because they could use money from other agencies to do the work. And it'll go back to under Director Miller, under Pat Quinn as governor.
Okay.
He came to us and he asked us about this sustainability bill for the DNR because there had been such big cuts and we were going to put fees on license plates. And I said, okay. And Director Miller and me sat in his office many days arguing over this. And I wanted no sweeps language, you know. And actually, Michael Madigan put that in the bill. I couldn't believe it, but he did. And I had a letter, and I still have the letter from Governor Quinn, that as long as he was the governor, he would not take anything off the general revenue budget, you know, away from them if we pass this bill to raise it. And it's $33.5 million sustainability bill, which they still get today.
Yeah.
You know, off of license plate fees. And of course, that lockbox opened that up then to where the legislators passed that lockbox amendment and thought it was about all of the toll roads, this, that, and the money being used on highways. They can take the DNR's money out of that and spend it on roads. It's just that's what happens.
My understanding was after that passed, and I remember specifically going to vote and seeing that language. And after that passed, the DNR took a huge hit. Like a huge hit.
Yep. And they're always they seem to be always taking hits.
Yeah.
You know, whenever they came to me with that, I understand, you know, they come to us with different things or they used to. You know, the past administrators, no matter what it was, the director, you know, whether it was Mark Miller or Wayne Rosenthal, you know, those were the two, or even all the way back to Brent Manning, they would come to the organizations and sit down and ask them questions. Well, what do you think about this? Can I have your support? We don't get that anymore when it comes to the outdoor recreation sporting community. We do not get that from this administration, and we have not had it. You know, I made some pretty big statements on the advisory board the last year I was there about misappropriation of funding, and even all the way back to Governor Rauner. You know, there was $58 million of OSLED grant money that just kind of disappeared. Mm-hmm. Well, I asked a lot of questions about that. Well, then it got down to, well, it was borrowed. And of course, it was borrowed, and they have 4 years to pay that money back or whatever. Okay, well, then there's another $28 million the next year. So, and then after all of that and the budget impasse and everybody, you know, we didn't have a budget. Nobody could do anything. I sat in an advisory board meeting and listened to them. 13 of us sit around there. We couldn't even buy our habitat stamps or our pheasant stamps, which would have cost the agency money because we didn't have a budget. They couldn't function. So I-4 actually paid for those. We paid for those stamps to be printed for the IDNR so that they wouldn't lose that funding that come in off of those stamps that they sell.
Wow.
And then, of course, we were reimbursed once they got a budget. But we did that. And we never collect a dime of any of that. Now, right across the table from me, there's two different groups that get all kinds of funding out of those. You think they would do it? No. So it's just, that's what we look at whenever I'm looking at this stuff, is how it all goes. You know, mm-hmm. Our habitat stamp that you pay for, and any hunter does that hunts deer or anything, about 80 to 90% of that now is going to one organization to do projects.
Right.
So, but they're really the only ones that are putting in for them because everybody's just so fed up with the system that they don't care anymore.
Right.
You know, so, and whenever you hear those things, of course, if you say something in the hunting community, then you're the bad guy. Well, and I've been the bad guy plenty of times, and, you know, but I don't do it on a personal level. It's mm-hmm. because that's what this organization sends me to do. And whenever I talk to a legislator, it's never my personal agenda.
Right.
It's always what that board of directors sends me and the people of the state of Illinois' best interest at heart from me is what you're going to get. And you know, we talked earlier about who's going to take over someday.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't learn this in a month.
Right.
You know, this is 25 years of spending my life away from my children, my grandchildren, my wife, my family. You know, I've missed a lot of stuff. But now my family supports me wholeheartedly in everything I do.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't be prouder of that. And I've had great support and mentors and people that have talked, you know, taught me things over the years. Two of them that are no longer with us, Vince and Deanna DiMuzio, mm-hmm. are longtime senators from over in Carlinville. Great supporters of the outdoor recreation community. And they taught me all kinds of stuff when I was first starting out doing this. So, you know, they're no longer with me, but they're still with me every day. You know, words and the things that they taught me about how to do political stuff and everything, I still do that to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget what Vince told me. Always do what your constituents ask you to do. Never run a personal agenda. And he said, do what the people of the state of Illinois ask and you will go far. Mm-hmm. And that's what Vince told me one day after I got my butt hung out to dry in a big meeting at the DNR. I really thought I knew what I was talking about, and they made me look bad. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that's when I met him, and we sat down and talked, and lifelong friends after that until they passed. So, you know, those types of relationships are built all the way across the board. Yeah. You know, and hunting, as you know, and fishing, and anything in the outdoors, the people you meet doing that, usually become your lifelong friends.
Right.
They'll help you in life. They will keep you out of trouble in life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if that goes away, and which it is,
yeah,
you know, our hunter numbers in the whole United States are steadily falling.
Yeah, that's
true. And we all know that the hunting community is and fishing community is being phased out. You know, and what are these kids doing today? I mean, it's... I know what I was doing when I was young, and thank God that I finally got back to the outdoors, because I know where I would be today if I would have stayed where I was.
Right.
You know, so that's part of the reason that I do what I do when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. What can people here locally do to take a position of, you know, advocating for our rights as outdoorsmen and women?
Well, they have to start paying attention to what's going on around them. You know, they have to look at these. You know, we have everything out there for them to see. You know, on our websites, our Facebook pages, when it comes to political action, you know, we send out the witness slips where they need to send that. They need to make their phone calls to their legislators.
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest with you, right here in our general area or most parts of below I-80,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't really matter if they call them or not, because we're not controlled by all the legislators downstate. We're controlled by one group of people above I-80, and they make every decision because they have the most votes. And it's a totally different lifestyle that they live in Chicago and the suburbs than we do in the rest of the state of Illinois. And I could tell people that because I've been there. Mm-hmm. You know, I slept there on those streets of Chicago years ago when I was a young man. You know, my grandfather's buried right across the line there in Hammond, Indiana. My uncle still lives there to this day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just totally different than the way we all, you know, there's kids up there that have never seen grass, yeah. You know, except for in a little city park. You know what I mean? It's just totally different. And I understand that. But how do we get them out of there and get them out doing what we love to do? And that's, there is no programs. We worked on an R3 program for years trying to get it started. And I've watched the bureaucracy in that go. We mm-hmm. paid somebody $400,000 a year to go run a Learn to Hunt program, and they touched about 30 kids in 1 year. Where I-4 has a youth camp of 100 in one weekend.
Right.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Give that money out to these groups and let them run these programs.
Right.
Because we could touch way more when you get the bureaucracy out of the middle of it. And across the country, we all know there's laws being passed, things are being changed that's going to limit everything we do in the outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now, I just watched 2 weeks ago in Kansas, and I don't know if you've seen any of this or not, but they passed a bill over there. Now, whether the governor signed it or not, I don't know, that you'll no longer be able to hunt any public ground if you're an out-of-state resident in Kansas.
Yeah.
The same thing's going on in Arkansas. The same thing's going on in Missouri. And we have one group of people out there, national group, that's pushing some of this stuff, and they're behind everything. They removed public permanent duck blinds in Missouri now, right across the river here. Over 100 or so of them that people highly utilize every year. Now you're going to have to go try and hunt out of a boat. Well, that takes away from old people.
Right.
That takes away from youth, because they ain't going to have a $10,000 boat and boat blind and everything to go hunt.
Right.
And then safety on top of it. So it's just, that's the push that we see going on here. And our numbers of hunters across the country has just steadily fallen and fallen. When I started on the advisory board 12 or 13 years ago, I want to say we had 375,000 hunters in the state. When I last checked 2 years ago, we could barely get to 200,000 total licenses sold in the state of Illinois, and that's including out-of-state residents.
Wow.
So when we're looking at them number fall-offs, the percentages of the public that are hunting now, it's not there.
That's interesting. So with it's harder and harder to get certain tags right now. It's harder to get deer tags, muzzleloader tags, firearm tags, the ones that have a specific amount. Is there anything that's changed in the past few years to limit the amount of tags that you're aware of?
Well, it just depends on what kind of management. Right now, there's about five different ad rule or bill changes for deer management, and I'd have to have all that sitting in front of me. You know, there's to where they're going to give more nuisance permits.
Okay.
To allow farmers to shoot more deer.
Okay.
That's just one of them that I right off the top of my head that yeah. that I can think of now. But there's just been this consistency over the CWD program. There's one up there to stop them from sharpshooting these deer in areas where they've been sharpshooting where there's no CWD being found. So there's starting to be a pushback on that. Okay. Well, then there again, that's a federally funded money that comes in. You got every biologist in the state of Illinois for 2 or 3 months up there. They ain't doing their regular job. They're sharpshooting deer every day.
Right.
And getting paid overtime to do it.
Yeah.
So that costs the taxpayers of the state of Illinois even more money for pensions and all of that because they have a federal program that pays for them to do it, but it doesn't – it boosts all of their stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just – and if it needs to be done, I agree. And I sat on an advisory board. You know, I was the vice chairman for a year. Like I said, 10 years I sat there on that. I was the OSLED grant chairman for the whole time I sat on it.
Yeah.
And then again, I became the chairman the last year in which our director, Colleen Callahan, never had a meeting. And I was never allowed to be in a meeting or run it because me and her got into it on the phone in a meeting over COVID when I was elected. And I said it then, and I'll say it today. Epic failure. Yeah. And then people called in and agreed with that. Some people chewed her out, you know, about how things were going. And, of course, I got the blame for that. You know, people have their own opinions, and they form them on their own. I don't have to – there's plenty of people out here that are not happy with our agency, you know, and the people that are running it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can find them anywhere. You can walk right out here and go uptown and find one in 2 seconds. You know that as well as I do.
Yeah.
So that's just, you know, that's part of the deal when you sit at the head of the table here. You got to be not bulletproof, but you got to be able to get hit and just keep going forward because you're going to get hit with everything.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. No matter what you do, somebody's not going to be happy with it.
Well, we're going to take a minute. We're going to take another break for hear a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
New Holland CR Twin Rotor Combines from Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville put more premium grain in the bin and save you money while doing it. Compared to competitive brand combines, CR Twin Rotor Combines lose significantly less grain. Independent third-party test results prove it. And CR Twin Rotor Combines use less fuel and harvest faster to save you real money. Finish your season sooner with more grain safely in the storage bin. See Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville about New Holland CR Twin Rotor Combines. They give you performance that pays. Jonathan Prain with Tarrant & Harmon Real Estate and Auction Company is a full-time land broker who can help you maximize your hard-earned dollars. Call Jonathan for a free assessment and to assist you in selling or finding your income-producing farm, dream hunting spot, rural home, or investment property. Jonathan Prain with Tarrant & Harmon Real Estate and Auction Company. Call 618-225-0568. 618-225-0568.
Welcome back to the WJBM Outdoors Show, brought to you by Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville. Today, we're coming to you from the WJBM studios in Jerseyville, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I'm Aaron Quillen. I operate Monarch Rivers, where the mission is simple, kill big deer. And again, we have Scotty Bryant of I-4, and we've been talking about a whole lot of stuff, Scotty. I love it, man. So right now there's some conversations going on about waterfowl.
Yes, they're having public meetings in, I think, 6 or 7 different places. They've already had a couple of these meetings. I know one up in Quincy they've had.
Okay.
On the 22nd in Alton, down at the Confluence Center down there by the Alton Dam, they're having one there.
Okay.
It's a public open house meeting about season dates, zone lines, you know, all of that stuff, because we're going to set the 5-year duck season dates for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
So I've been involved with that highly over the years. It's something that used to be ran through. They actually had meetings with the advisory board in Springfield where all the constituent groups could come and talk with the advisory board, and they would make recommendations, and then the advisory board would make recommendations to the department, you know, to the director, and that's all gone.
Okay.
That's basically, these public meetings are the only voice that the people have.
Yeah.
And it's individuals. You know, you're going to have to go yourself to these meetings and listen to it. I haven't seen the criteria on it. I've been dealing with a lot of gun issue stuff right here over the last month. Of course, it's legislative time. We've been involved with lots of different things. You know, one of them that I want to make sure everybody knows, that there's actually a bill out there right now that's going to enable the IDNR the ability to turn apex predators loose back in the state of Illinois, to bring them back.
What?
So we're going to bring back maybe some mountain lions. Maybe we're going to bring back some bears. Of course, we do have a few wolves in northern Illinois already. But those animals will be protected, and you can't touch them. You know, right now, I didn't know this. You know, we've got sightings all over. I'm sure you've heard them, seen them on trail cams, Calhoun County, you know, different places where these mountain lions, and one of them I seen's a big one. Yeah. I mean, it's not no young 220-pound mountain lion. It looks like it's a hog, about 300-pounder.
It's a monster, isn't it?
Yeah. And I asked this question, and I didn't know it. You know, a few years back, an elk was killed over there somewhere during deer season. And, of course, there's no season on elk here.
It seems like there's an elk killed just about every year during bow season.
Well, we're not supposed to shoot them.
We aren't?
That's what I was told by one of the game wardens. And also, we can't shoot that mountain lion unless it's a threat. If it's threatening your life, well... I said, so what are you telling me? If it's 200 yards out walking across the cornfield by my house, I can't shoot it? No. Well, I got grandchildren, you know, and I don't want a mountain lion walking 200 yards from my house. So these are the types of things where we're going to argue. I-4 is going to argue this point, and we already have before. So that's just one thing I want the people to know about. But I want to get back to that waterfowl stuff. Right now, there's a big push here. And we've actually FOIA'd a bunch of stuff from the IDNR that we are no longer going to plant corn on any of our waterfowl sites or refuges in the state of Illinois. And it's going to start with Carlisle Lake. You know, and of course, we FOIA'd things that we asked for. We know that there's some stuff that we didn't receive, and we're right in the middle of this right now.
Mm-hmm.
But there again, if you go across the river to Missouri, there's nothing but thousands upon thousands of acres of standing flooded corn in private clubs, and even the DNR management areas, and even some of the Fish and Wildlife Service areas have standing flooded corn that people hunt in. Well, guess where all the ducks are going now? And they say moist soil is the best thing there is. Well, that's all fine and well, and I believe that to a certain extent. But I listen to people like Frank Belrose, who's the godfather of waterfowl, who wrote the waterfowl Bible that helped bring back him and Aldo Leopold and some of those guys.
Yeah.
The wood ducks when they were endangered. You know, now we can shoot 3 ducks when you couldn't hardly shoot any when I was a kid.
Right.
So, and he said there was 4 things that you needed to have successful waterfowl management. One was timber. One was crop ground, row crops. Mm-hmm. The other was aquatics. And the other was timber. You know, the 4 things basically that they said that they needed in moist soil.
You said timber twice.
Okay, well, moist soil was the other.
Okay,
one.
Yeah.
So, you know, and there again, I've lived by that all my life. You know, and agree that moist soil is good, but it's not going to be as good when it's sub-degree weather, when you can sit in corn and eat that high energy, because that's where they're sitting. And if the waterfowl hunting community doesn't think so, you can go look over at Habitat Flats. up on that Missouri River on January the 15th, holding 1.5 million waterfowl, and he makes a statement that they just now ate the corn out, and now they're moving over to my moist soil units. Those waterfowl never migrated. Once they got there, they were done.
Right.
So we're stopping the natural migration of wild animals by doing some of the things that we've done, and it's man's fault. And that's my opinion, of course, and that's the opinion of some of my waterfowl groups as well. But right now, as we speak, our state, our IDNR, and our biologists here are all not going to – they're trying to phase out completely planting any row crops at all on any of our state refuges, our waterfowl hunting areas. And we're losing waterfowl hunting and losing these public – people are not even drawn for some of these sites anymore. And I'll be honest with you. I leased a place in southeast Missouri. I don't even hunt here anymore because of our management. Mm-hmm. And I grew up hunting right here. You know, I was with the Scott boys when we set the state record on a public area down there. Mm-hmm. I've seen the best waterfowl hunting there is in the state of Illinois right there in those years with those guys.
Yeah.
And the best blinds out there now, the same ones that we were in, you'd be lucky to kill 300 or 400 ducks. Mm-hmm. And some of them, you know, there's a couple blinds being hunted in every area now instead of all of them being hunted.
Right.
That's another problem.
I noticed that.
Right. So the numbers will go up on duck kill that way, but you're not having people are not out there. So, you know, when we were hunting there at Stump Lake back when that went on, every blind around, there was people hunting in almost every blind.
Right.
And there was all kinds of ducks harvested that year. You know, and it was a dream season of a lifetime.
Yeah.
So, you know, but we had 3 great years there. And but we hunted every day, and that's our life. That's what we live for. Mm-hmm. So as we looked at all that, them same blinds now, some of them don't even kill 300 or 400 ducks. And they'll say, well, it just depends on who's hunting them. Well, that's true, too, to a certain extent. You know, it's the quality of the hunter, the person with the most experience.
Yeah.
But still, the best blinds years ago when I was a kid, they're still going to kill ducks no matter who was in them. And now they don't.
Right.
So we're losing our hunting there. And our deer hunting on state ground, we don't do anything on this 24,000 acres right here where we live to try and help people hunt deer.
Right.
Okay, you can go out there and deer hunt, but you're not going to deer hunt 24,000 acres and try to drag a deer 6 miles through the woods.
Right.
You know, and I'm not saying we need a bunch of four-wheeler pass all over or different things, you know, like that. But I think people should be allowed to go in and set a stand before mm-hmm. season.
Yeah.
And then if they harvest a deer, drive in and pick it up if they can. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's all stuff that could be worked out or worked on if you truly cared about what the hunting community wanted.
Right.
But we don't have that here either. We got somebody down here running this area that wants to try and restrict everybody from hunting. You know, told older people that, well, you can go coon hunting down here. I'll give you this permit, and draws a circle and says you can hunt 25 acres. Well, I don't know where you're going to run a coon dog at in 25 acres.
That's going to be tough.
When you got 24,000, why would you even do that? And at nighttime when nobody's even out there around there. You know, and especially when we're the worst state in the union for having public ground to hunt on. So, you know, if nobody else is out there hunting it, why wouldn't you allow those people at nighttime to be down there hunting those areas?
Right.
You know, and just make it as hard as we possibly can for them not to do it. Those are the things that frustrate me as a leader and the organizations whenever we're dealing with that.
Yeah.
But that's a main deal with the waterfowl hunting community right now is these meetings. There could be some big changes. And we fought many years ago under Director Miller to get 4 zones in the state of Illinois mm-hmm. because we're the longest geographical state, and trying to split it up for flights, freeze dates, and everything that's involved with that. There was so much fighting years ago when we had 3 zones that they were cutting each other's tires and fist fighting in parking lots over media, over duck gunning,
right?
Over the dates. Well, now there's talk that we're going to go back to 3 zones maybe, and we're going to have some sort of a split. And I haven't seen any of it yet, but I urge these people, they better get out there and make sure this is what they want, or at least voice their opinion about it, because if not, the state's going to do whatever they want.
Okay, let's talk about this for a second. So if somebody opposes, let's say I oppose the idea of going to three zones, what is my first order of action? Contact
I-4? This meeting should be able, you should be able to fill out a thing at this meeting saying what your opinion is.
Okay.
So and they should take that into account.
Where do I find these meetings? So
well, they're on the IDNR website where they're having them at. And like I said, for the people here in this general area, it's the 22nd of this month,
which is going to be tomorrow.
Right.
And down at the Confluence. This is going to be aired on Saturday.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's been out there, but that's mm-hmm. the thing. During the summertime, nobody, you know, we've got this on the I-4 website that this meetings are going on. We've got it on our Facebook page.
Okay.
You know, the affiliate groups have done the same thing. You know, so it is
like
out there.
Ducks Unlimited.
Well, Ducks Unlimited doesn't work with anybody except themselves.
Oh, okay. So what are some of the associations that it's that you partner with that would be sharing the same information?
Oh, the Mississippi Valley Hunters and Fishermen, the okay. Belleville area, our Belleville Duck Hunters,
okay,
the Carlisle Lake Waterfowlers, Migratory Waterfowl Hunters, Basstown Sportsman's Club, I'm trying to think there's three or four other smaller groups, you know, that are not just a duck club, but they're like a whole group of different type of hunters.
Yeah.
But they're out there, all of the major waterfowl groups right in the general area and across the state, they know about these meetings.
Okay.
So, and they should have them up. I know Migratory does. Basstown doesn't have a website or anything, but I was at their meeting on Saturday. They made their people well aware over in that area. Like I said, Mississippi Valley Hunters and Fishermen, they're highly involved in everything that goes on around Quincy. They're the ones that help start Fishing for Freedom up there. I don't know if you've been up to that or not, but you know, I sit with a lot of people that do a lot of volunteering across this state to protect all of our stuff. So it's mm-hmm. not just me.
Right.
You know, I have great people around me that make decisions and try to protect everything as well. And to protect the waterfowl heritage that I grew up, you know, I mean, this is my passion in life is waterfowl hunting. And, you know, I don't even hunt here anymore. It's really sad. You know, I live where I live because that's where I wanted to be to hunt right there and see ducks, and I don't even see them anymore at my house. And mm-hmm. I live right in the Elder River bottom. So, you know, you don't see any type of waterfowl out in there anymore, hardly at all, like you used to when I first moved there, all season long.
Right.
And I can go to southeast Missouri, 4.5 hours away from here, and have 5,000 ducks sitting in the field I hunt in on opening day.
Right.
It's just, I don't know all the reasons why. And I don't claim to be the smartest, but management, Missouri's way ahead of us on our waterfowl management and what they're, however they're changing things. And they made that statement over 20 years ago that they were going to take our ducks. And that's exactly what it looks like right now.
Have you seen the stuff online about the collared ducks and how they're flying this flyway?
Yeah, I watch all of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, very few of them come to the east of the Mississippi River. And they'll tell you, well, we got all kind of ducks in Illinois. Well, you're counting them in a flight where you're counting all of them that are sitting on the Mississippi River, including over right across from Grafton. Mm-hmm. You know, Grafton was the mecca of waterfowl hunting in the state for years back when I was a kid. People yeah. come from everywhere. And the Illinois River, too. Bath, Illinois, all them places. Saginaw's. There ain't nobody coming to Grafton anymore to waterfowl hunt. You don't see hardly anybody travel up there anymore for waterfowl hunting from out of state or just show up here to see what it's like or you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I go to southeast Missouri where I'm at now, people come from all over the country
right,
to come down there and go waterfowl hunting. So not only is the hunting impacted, all of the other stuff's impacted as well. You know, all the tourism, all the hotel stays, restaurants, everything is affected by people not coming here to waterfowl hunt anymore.
Well, that's going back to the idea of states precluding out-of-state hunters from hunting their, you know, public ground. That's just going to destroy tourism. And it's going to make us more reliant on commercial tourism.
Well, that's the thing. And I don't try to take away from anybody. I know that you run a business to bring people and go deer hunting, and I want everybody to be able to do that. But it can't be at the detriment of the public hunter. And, you know, there's a big difference between deer hunting and duck hunting when it comes to outfitting and things like that. But it looks like across the country that's what they're saying, it's overcrowding. Well, it ain't overcrowding down here at the MRA anymore, because you can get a duck blind in any one of those areas every morning. When I was a kid, you go home sometimes.
Right.
So, you know, what has happened to that? Now, I'm not saying society hasn't changed or kids hasn't changed. Kids don't do the same thing we did. But they're not being put in the situation where it's out there for them to be able to try it. Where we all, you know, we had to go outside and do stuff. You know, they're satisfied with whatever it is they do. You know, my grandkids, same way. Come on, I want you to go help me. Why? Well, you want to duck hunt someday? Not really. Well, have you ever been? No. We don't want to try it? Not really. You know, okay, if that's not what you want to do, that's fine. But you ought to at least go try it.
100%.
You know?
It's my hope that, you know, they say the pendulum always swings back the other way. I hope that it's getting close to the other side of the stroke, because, you know, as outdoors people, as hunters, as fishermen, we're all essentially on the same team.
Oh, absolutely.
Another gentleman I know named Scott from Michigan hunted with me a bunch way back in the day. He'd always say, Aaron, there's two types of people out there. There's people that kill stuff, and there's people that don't.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is, you either hunt or you don't.
Right. Don't try to take away what we like to do, because you don't do it. And that's a part of the problem that we have now too. There's people that's trying to stop what we do.
Yeah. I'm all for people getting along and everybody having their own things that they're into. At the end of the day, don't interrupt my food.
Right. Well, what I've seen, sitting with all the people on the I-4 board, is that we're our own worst enemy sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Because hunters want what they want, and they don't care. You know, they don't stop and think about, well, I like the deer hunt, but this guy over here, he likes the dog hunt. So I lease up this ground, or I own this ground, and now all of a sudden I ain't letting nobody on here because I want to kill a trophy deer.
Yeah.
Okay, so now the guys can't run their dogs because, you know, if it runs across property, somebody's got leasing. Oh, they're getting a ticket. So now we're telling somebody else they can't do what they love to do. And of course, it doesn't matter where you go now. It ain't like back when we were kids where you could just turn something loose. You're going to be on somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, there again, let's look at the management. You know, are you going to have big deer here? Are you going to have a deer herd here with all these coyotes? And if you bring apex predators back? Are we looking at the resource and what's going on with that? Are we just going to fight and argue amongst ourselves? And I've seen some knockdown, dragout arguments in my board meeting with the dog hunters and the trappers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm talking mad, you know, and have to get up and stop everything and get it figured out. And they always do once they slow down, because everybody's passionate about what they like to do.
Absolutely.
But when the hunter fights amongst themselves, we're losing the game.
Right.
And that's what they do. These people are good at getting the hunting community to argue amongst each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big part of the problem.
Yeah. Well, appreciate you coming out.
And, I'm glad to be here. I looked forward to it. And it's hard to get our word out anymore, you know, because a lot of the outdoor riders and stuff, when it comes to politics, they're going to shy away from me because, mm-hmm. you know, I tell it like it is, and it ain't always what people want to hear. And it's not personal. It's just doing what the people that sent me here asked me to go do.
You represent the people.
I do, absolutely.
That's right.
The majority of the people and the groups and what they want me to do, that's what I'm going to do.
Yes, sir. One more time, I-4's website.
Illinois Federation for Outdoor Resources is our if.org, I think it is.
Okay.
And we have a Facebook page, Illinois Federation for Outdoor Resources, which will take you right back to the website.
Okay.
And any news flashes or bulletins about legislation or anything will be put up on there, and you can punch right on the witness slip, and it goes straight to the Capitol.
Okay.
You can fill it out right on there, whether it's a gun issue, a hunting issue, or anything that we're tracking. Our lobbyist, you know, is up there every day watching out for our rights and our funding. So.
Okay. And then clips from today's show are going to be on the WJBM YouTube channel as we get that up and running.
Cool.
Yeah. So we can share away on that.
I look forward to it.
All right. Well, thank you again.
No, thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Appreciate it.
Hunting and fishing, loving every day. I want to see them tall pines sway. Y'all close them eyes, let's go there in our mind. Hunting and fishing and loving every day, that's the prayer this country boy prays. Thank God he made me this way. Hunting and fishing and loving every day. Black coffee in the morning, dark whiskey in the evening. I get red dirt rich and clear of a pay. Hunting and fishing and loving every day.
See more and do more in a new 300 series compact track loader from New Holland. Its industry-leading 360-degree visibility is truly something to see at Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville. With its reverse camera and 8-inch multifunction LCD display, Super Boom lift technology, rock-solid stability, and redesigned controls, you'll work with greater speed, safety, and precision. Maximum productivity starts with a clear view. Stop by Midwest Tractor Sales in Jerseyville today and see how a new 300 series compact track loader helps you do more.